I was watching the Gerger World Cup slalom a few weeks ago on TV. This is something I've done for years. It is a perfectly normal way for me to spend a weekend day. What was wildly different this time, though, was that when Bib 28 pushed out of the gate, I put my helmet on, grabbed my skis, went up the gondola, and 20 minutes later, I was pushing out of the start gate of my first ever World Cup race. Guys, I don't always tell you my personal news, but this was just so cool. Racing World Cup has always been the dream, and I got to do it. Unfortunately, I only made it halfway down before straddling, but I was there, and I participated. And Arc City's journalistic coverage of the World Cup is now a whole lot more informed. Speaking of all that, the Gurgel Slalom was Atle McGrath's first World Cup back from injury. I interviewed him a couple months ago, in Sasve. Let's get to it. And we are back. I'm Jimmy Krupka, and welcome to Arc City. Arc City is presented by Ski Racing Media, and this episode is sponsored by On Location. Also, a shout out to Sync Performance and the World Cup Dreams Foundation for supporting me this season. And now, the 23-year-old Norwegian skier, who was born in Vermont, by the way, but more importantly, who is a two-time World Cup slalom winner. Without further ado, Atle Lie McGrath. Atle McGrath, welcome back to Arc City.
Back to Arc City, thank you. Is this the first ever second take you've had to do?
Yeah, I've never had to do a second take before.
I'm pretty privileged then to be the first ever second take on the Arc City podcast.
Yeah. So for those listening who don't know, I fumbled the SD card. It ended up in a pocket of coins or something. I think that's what made it die. But when I went to plug in the SD card of the conversation that Atle and I had in Copper of last year.
Like November.
Didn't work. Yeah, November of last year. It didn't work.
Sweet.
So we're back. I pulled up the same questions. Actually, it was a pretty loose outline I'm looking at right now. So we'll kind of hit some of the same points that we talked about last time that nobody heard except for us and like maybe Lucas in the other room. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, he was there. I forgot.
We'll go from there.
Sweet.
So first of all, to situate us where we are right now, we're in Sasve, Switzerland, glacier training in the mornings, hanging out in the afternoons. You are doing your return to Gates already in New Zealand.
Yeah.
So just walk me through kind of your progression back on snow from injury.
Yeah. So it's been, I tore my ACL in the World Champs in February, which is now 7 months ago, I think. Mm-hmm.
Do you know the exact date on that?
I think it was like the 8th or 9th of February.
I don't know the exact date of my leg injury, I don't know if you're like superstitious about
the
date.
I'm not superstitious. You know, actually, a funny thing that we can pull up because we do this later is that in the January 8th, 2021, Lucas and I, we both tore our MCLs in Adelboden. January 8th, 2023, we were first and second in the slalom.
Oh, that's
exactly
so cool.
2 years after. Isn't that kind of cool?
Yeah.
So I'm not superstitious, but that happened exactly on the day 2 years later. Crazy. And it took me like a couple months to realize. But I'm not superstitious about injuries. And so I'm about 7 months through the process. I'm in this like phase now where I'm almost healthy, but I still got to be a little bit careful. And I've had a good process. I mean, it's anyone who's been through an ACL like injury knows it's a beast. Of a injury, it takes so much patience. It's a lot of pain, and like especially my first 3 months of rehab at home in Norway was like filled with lots of discomfort.
Really,
not so much swelling, but just just like muscular pain from where they took the graft out, and a lot of stiffness. And then something happened. Like I took a 1 week vacation in
There's
Greece.
The American accent,
yeah, exactly, in Greece. In like May, and I came back from it, and then just like all of a sudden something had clicked and it helped.
The ocean is healing.
It might be the ocean, you know?
Seriously.
Yeah, yeah.
I have theories on this, but it's really funny the amount of people I talk to that go, you know what? I just had a vacation. Yeah. I went to the ocean, and next thing you know, it's like my knee is good or my leg is good.
You know, it was, I had a bone bruise on the back of my, on the back side of my knee that was so frustrating, and it was like hurt to walk. And I came home and it was gone. It like disappeared in a day. You know, one day on vacation, I woke up, I'm like, huh? It's gone. Crazy. So it was, maybe it's something.
Yeah.
But after that, I had a really good summer with my team. Did a lot more than I thought I could do, and like actually did the program. Not
like
just
the weight training,
yeah,
the
weight
biking,
training,
all
biking.
That.
We played tennis. I, you know, did some gymnastics, just easy. And then in August, around the first of August, which was right around, it's a little over a month ago now, a month and a half, I had my first days of skiing, which was like indoors in Norway. And I had five days indoors in Norway, and then went to New Zealand for 20 days, which was, I was not sure if I was going to get, like, make it.
Yeah.
But since the progress was so good, it was like, okay, we're going to get to go. And I'm so glad I did, because I had like 15 awesome days of skiing there. Just, I think I had like 13 days of free skiing and slow drills, and I was the same
13
place.
13 days.
And I had 5 days indoors. So I had like at least almost, I had like 18 days of only free skiing and slow drills before I even touched a stubby gate.
Were you getting so sick of it? Or
surprisingly not. I thought I would. I thought I was going to get so bored. And it was a couple days I was feeling it when the other guys were training and the conditions were like perfect. And I just, it wasn't necessarily feeling like I was missing out. It was just like seeing them rip and being like, oh, I'm so far away. But then once I started doing some brushes and then I went into the real course, then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, like free skiing actually helps.
Yeah.
So now I had a couple days in New Zealand with gates, and then I had two days indoors in Norway where I skied on ice for the first time, which was kind of sketchy, but it was good.
Yeah.
And then now I've had 3 days here with like my first real GS training, like actually somewhat intense.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's decently steep. Like, did you have ice?
Yeah, I had some ice, but it's more just speed.
Yeah, faster.
Exactly. You know, I think we can all, every skier can relate that once you like, you can ski on easy slopes, and then once you hit those quicker slopes, then it's quite the shock for the body to begin with. So,
yeah, for sure.
But yeah, I'm happy. It's been good. 7 months out now. You know, hopefully, I think the first races are coming up in not too long, and we'll just, you know, see where I see what happens. You know,
yeah, you were saying to me before we started, probably won't do Solden.
Yeah, that's, I kind of put away Solden a while ago. Yeah. Just because it's so much stress for one race. And it's something about, like, I'm trying to look like I have a long career ahead of me still.
Yeah.
It's one race. And if I don't race it, I buy myself like a month until the next race. And then also 6 weeks until the next GS. So then you just have so much prep.
Yeah.
So that's why it's,
that's smart.
Gonna be, yeah.
I think that's
so
really
it's
smart.
It's, I'll see, like, with the progression I have now, I feel like I would be ready to go in a race in 30 days, but I'm not going to push it.
Yeah, well, it's 30 days away, huh?
It is only 30 days away.
Wow.
Which is crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, that
it
is crazy. It's
going so fast. It felt like it was just summer.
Yeah, and it still feels like summer. Like, yeah. We were, for those listening, again, we were going to do it out in the porch of this, of like the hotel room, and it's way too hot out there.
Yeah, I can't sit there for the talk. Yeah. So, but that's why it comes so fast on you.
Yeah.
It really does.
Yeah. And yeah, I think volume is huge. Just getting those reps in after your injury. Do you ever find that, like, when you first started skiing in gates again, you're like, wow, I'm going fast?
yeah. Oh, big time. My first days in New Zealand, I was like, holy, this is like sketchy, man.
And then you're like, you watch your video and you're like, I can't believe how slow I'm going.
Yeah,
kind of thing.
Yeah. Totally. And then you're just, that's classic. And then you know, it was the same here. Like, I went up the first day on the fists, if anyone listening has been there in Sasfe, and I go out and I start further down and I hit the course and I like go four gates and then I stop because I was like, this is so much faster than what I'm used to. And then I took like a couple runs to get into it, and then all of a sudden it was good.
Yeah. And you have that base of free skiing. So like your skiing is solid right now.
Exactly.
And that makes it all better.
That helps a lot. So, but it's like a process, which is fun and tiring at the same time. Because it's something about being injured and then really starting from scratch.
Yeah.
Which is kind of exciting because you see a lot of progress and you can really focus on the small things. But then again, it's like you're starting from scratch.
Yeah.
It kind of feels like you've lost a lot of the things that you've built up over the last years.
I can definitely relate to that. The coming back from injury sucks, but also you make progress every day, which is something that it feels like once you're back to normal in everyday ski racing, you have these crazy ups and downs sometimes. And it's just a beautiful thing to always be improving. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, it is. It's nice. So I'm enjoying this period where I just feel better and better.
Yeah,
every day, you know? It's nice. Yeah. And it gives like, I don't know if it's confidence or fake confidence, but it gives confidence.
Yeah, for
like,
sure.
A good feeling that like, I'm just getting better and better. So it's fun. And then, you know, I got plenty of skiing coming up this this fall and going into the winter. So I'm not stressed about it.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, sorry to interrupt you.
No stress.
I was going to ask you about what races. We'll get to my whole like list of topics, but I feel like now that we're on the topic of the injury, we might as well get deep into it because it's interesting to talk about. So what races are you going to do? Are you going to do Super G this year, Slalom, GS? Is that the plan?
Slalom and GS for sure. Super G, I'm going to train this year. The FIS has put up a pretty tough race calendar this year, so it doesn't look that realistic to do many. Maybe some after Christmas, but again, it's last year I had the experience of trying to put on more events, and you know I raced in the end with the world champs. I ended up racing in four different events, you know, with like Slalom, GS, Super G, and combined, and I was like, I was able to perform well. I had like top five results in all of them. But then again, I wasn't as good in Slalom and GS as I was the year before. So it took a little bit away. Like that was how it ended up being for me because it's so tough to combine, especially with the Slalom. So I think I kind of matured a little and realized like now with injury, I need to be smarter. But also it's more fun to fight for podium and wins in two events than top fives in four events.
That makes sense.
If that kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
So that was something I just had to learn the hard way.
Yeah,
in a sense. So with that experience, I'm just really putting my eye in on Slalom and GS, trying to nail it from the start of the season, get into a good flow, and if I have time for some Super G races, I will. But I'm for sure going to train Super G because I absolutely love it.
Yeah,
and I think it helps my skiing.
Yeah, I think that definitely helps, and it's fun. Do you have like more respect for guys like Pintero or Bodie? Like I think Bodie had a week. A month, one year, where he won in every single event.
Yeah.
Like, is that mind blowing now that like you're at the top of the sport and you're trying to add events and it's just like, man, how do they do it?
Yeah, it's mind blowing. And like the fact that Bodie's done it. I mean, I think Ted, he's also like podiumed in every event.
Yeah. We had that world champs. That was insane. Yeah, Three gold medals.
Yeah, yeah. And then like Pintero, I think like Pintero is one of the guys, and you can put in Loic Maillard as well, although he doesn't do downhill necessarily.
Schwartz,
the world championships. He was top six every event.
That's insane.
And those are some of the guys, few guys, because it's tougher now than, like, if you look at guys like some of the Norwegian legends, like Kjetil André og Mats Lasse Kjus, even Axel, these guys, they did every event at a point, but it was a little different.
Back in the 80s, 90s, early
2000s.
Yeah,
early 2000s. Because people are more specialized now. And it's not taking anything away from what those guys did. But that makes, for me, like what Pintero and Schwartz, for instance, does, even more impressive. Because that is hard. And also with the schedule this year, or like last year, it's like crazy how much they race. And to be able to ski all these different events, which feels like different sports.
Yeah, they do sometimes.
It's insane.
Yeah.
But so I've gotten big respect for those guys, and I've also gotten really big respect for the speed guys. Even I did like my first World Cup downhill this year in Beaver Creek. Yeah. I did a training run. Most nervous I was all season. I was so scared. And because things are like big and sketchy. So yeah, my respect has grown a lot.
Yeah, for sure. The downhillers are crazy.
They are.
I'm curious about your comeback from injury now that it's your second injury. You had the MCL when you and Lucas did it January 8th, 3 years ago now.
2 years ago, actually.
2021. Yeah. And now you have this one. Are you like, does it's got to suck to be like, man, I I was injured. Like, I thought I got that over. And then you got injured again. Like, are you, my question is, do you feel like you're smarter now? You have a way to prevent injury. There's kind of a pattern to why you got injured, or does it feel random?
The first one, I mean, like the first rehab injury and rehab process, the injury happened because I went way too hard in the race. That, like, I could see it coming, mm-hmm. in a sense. Because that was, I had podiumed the GS race before, and I came to Adelboden, and I felt like I had to prove that I wasn't a one-shot wonder, big time. And then I just skied without thinking, and I skied so hard and crashed. So I kind of get it. And that I learned from. And that process was somewhat fun because it was shorter in the first time. But then this one, when this one hit, I was a bit more, it hit me pretty hard, both like physically and mentally as well. Because I think a little bit, I've just really tried to reflect on why I crashed in the World Championships. And I kind of think it's a, if it's like one specific thing to point out, it's like not working well enough on the inspection. And kind of focusing more on the course than the terrain, because I made, it was a blind gate with a roll, and I got light over the roll and landed in a compression, which made me go out and split. But I think kind of the reason why it might have happened was that 2 days before it was the combined, which was my World Championships debut, and I came into the race with hopes of a medal, and I skied a very cautious super G, so I was like 1.2 seconds out. And I skied a great slalom and caught like 6 or 7 tenths. So I ended up fifth, like under 2 tenths from a medal. And everyone, that's so tantalizing. in my debut, and everyone came up to me like, how are you going to handle this disappointment? Like the media.
Wow.
People were like, just like, yeah. You know, they were painting it as a disappointment. Also, like in Norwegian media, I was like, fifth place in debut, like,
because
I was the only Norwegian as well from both the boys and the girls who skied. And they were like, kind of putting it down as like a failure.
Yeah.
And I was like, I just finished fifth in my World Champs debut and I'm 22 years old. It's like,
it's not a bad day.
It's not that bad of a day. And then
screw the media,
you
man.
Know, but then again, it wasn't just that, but then because I skied so cautious in the super G, that's where I lost it.
Personally, I bet personally you were like, man, I could have been a little bit faster.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And personally, I did what I could in the slalom.
Yeah.
In the super G, that kind of annoyed me. And then with these small comments on top, I was like, okay, I'm going to prove myself in the Super G. In the same hill, same snow. I knew I could be fast, and I skied really well. And then I just lost my focus for a half a second over a tough section. And then next thing I remember, I was like in the net, and I knew something was wrong.
Oh, right, really?
Away. Yeah, like I could feel it. I skied down on my own feet because I was thinking, like, a lot of people are watching. I'm not going to make a big scene when I can get down myself. But then once I got into the finish and got into the medical tent, I was like, I'm screwed. That was my feeling.
Yeah. You felt your knee twist or whatever.
I didn't feel it pop, but I was like, gut feeling was this is bad.
Yeah.
And it took a long time. Like I actually, I don't think I've really told many, but when they took me in for surgery, they didn't know if my ACL needed to be fixed or not. They weren't sure because it wasn't 100% torn. And I had the physio, the main physio on the Norwegian team was like, I don't think you need surgery. Let's do rehab for 2 months. And then the doctor who was going to do the surgery on me was like, I think we should do it. And then they kind of gave me the choice. Like, what do you want to do? You want to try and train it up? And then if you're lucky, you're good in 2 months, or do you want to go in and have surgery? And I was like, I'm not waiting.
Yeah.
So then we went in and we had a look at the ACL, and it was like 90% torn
on the MRI.
You had to look? No, I took an MRI, but they went in.
Oh, they
like
physically
opened up. Opened up, yeah. And went in.
It just took a little peek.
Yeah, so I was put in anesthesia, like, oh, we'll wake up and see the answer. And then I was thinking, like, okay, I'll either wake up and I'll be good in like a month or two, or I have 9 tough months ahead of me.
Yeah.
And I woke up and they were like, sorry, bro. Damn. ACL.
Did you do hamstring graft?
No, the quad.
Quad, okay. Yeah, because everyone goes back and forth on that.
Yeah.
People do patella, and that kind of messes with their patella for a while.
It does, and that's not good for skiers.
Yeah.
Like, if you go into the details, like, what different athletes, it depends on what sport you're doing.
Yeah.
For alpine skiers, it's normal to do, like, above the knee cap.
Uh-huh. Yeah, like that quad tendon. Yeah. So when we talked last, I'm just remembering this now, you talked about how you've had some moments where you're like, I don't know if like this is worth it, like all of this hard work. And you've had moments where you're like, wow, like mental health is a real thing, like like kind of down in the dumps right now. Was that like something you experienced after this knee injury, like a little bit down in the dumps, a little bit questioning why you do it?
Big time. Yeah. It really was. Like this, it hit pretty hard, especially like the first 2 months after surgery, because it was, I couldn't believe I was back in the same position as I was 2 years before. Kind of thought I was done with it, because they're all like, oh, everyone gets through one knee injury in their career, but I didn't think I was going to have two by the age of 22.
Yeah.
You know? So it felt kind of unfair, but you know, can't think of it that way. But it was I had like a pretty tough period, being at home watching races on TV, which you like were hoping to ski.
Yeah.
But luckily so I had some days that were pretty tough. And luckily I had, a lot of good family around me. I had some friends who came by, and my girlfriend was taking really well good care of me, and she was trying to get my mind off things, which kind of helped. But in the end, I had days, especially if I want to point out like 2 days that were the absolute toughest for me in the rehab period, was Palisade Slalom, when Sanderson Olsen and Timon Haugan finished first and second.
Oh, you just want to be there with your team.
And Lucas, when he won the Slalom Globe in Andorra. And it was not because I was like, oh, I should have been there, I should have raced, I should have done. It was, how am I sitting here missing this experience?
Yeah.
When Sander and Timon take a double win, and both, it was like Sander's first podium, Timon's first podium in like 4 years. And, love those guys. And we were such a tight team. And I'm just seeing them getting videos that they're out celebrating, having a great time. And I'm sitting home and I'm like, this sucks big time. That was really tough. And then the same when Lucas won the Globe, because it was something about us being so tight together for so many years and like seeing his progress. And then, we had a really good battle, the 21-22 season for the Slalom Globe, or for like the Slalom standings.
Yeah.
And it was like super tight. It was 1 point between us. So I knew, how hungry he was to really kick ass last season. And then him winning it and just only being able to be there through the TV screen.
Yeah.
And then, they went out and watched the El Clasico match afterwards. Soccer match.
Yeah,
they went out partying in Barcelona, and I was sitting and just getting videos.
Did you FaceTime him after he won the Globe?
I tried,
but he was so busy.
No chance. I sent him. I tried, and I just sent him a message, and I probably got an answer like 5 days later.
Yeah,
because he was so busy. But those 2 days were really harsh, and I just sat at home, and it was just hard to. I just had to accept that the emotions, that it was tough and that I was in a slump and that there was nothing I could do about it there and then. And then it's gotten better. Like, I feel like with my mental health and everything has gotten better throughout, when I've physically gotten better as well, because those are really connected. So then I've had, after those, pretty much after the season was over, the World Cup season, then it started getting a bit better for me, because then you weren't sitting there every weekend watching a race you were supposed to be in.
Yeah, definitely. I felt that a little bit. I'd watched some live timing when I was injured, but so I kind of know the feeling. But it's cool to hear about your connection with the team, because I know the Norwegian team connection is strong, but it's cool to watch you guys, and cool to hear about. You're like, I didn't want to be there for me. I just want to be there for my teammates.
For the team, that's the only reason.
And that's a beautiful thing to hear about. So I like that. Yeah. Is there anything like you think points to you guys creating a team atmosphere? Is it just the fact that you prioritize it? Like, was there anything when you joined the team, the older guy sat you down and said, this is how we do things as a Norwegian team?
Sort of. Mm-hmm. It was like, there are the team rules, like we have some specific rules and like a game book that we go with.
Mm-hmm.
And it's simple things like you always eat dinner together, especially the night before a race.
There's
no exceptions.
No exceptions, always dinner together the night before the race.
Like no phones at any meals, and all this stuff, and like try and do as much together as possible. But then I remember Jansrud, he sat me down because I was 18 when I got in, or 19 I was when I got into the, like officially on the World Cup team. And he sat me down, and what he told me was, like, this was in the summer, he was like, what did he say? He said, like, it doesn't matter when, like, if you have World Cup medal, no, World Cup wins, Olympic medals, World Championship medals, if you have globes, it doesn't matter how many you have. If you're on this team, then you've, like, you've made your way on it. You deserve it. And when you're on the team, we all have the same worth and we all have the same say. So, like, use your voice. Like, be yourself and, like, don't be afraid to kind of participate.
Yeah,
is kind of the thing. And that helped a lot, because then I was like, felt like I was able to participate and didn't feel like I was just the young guy who was coming with stupid stuff.
Yeah, you felt like you belonged.
Yeah, I felt like I belonged. And, like, what I could bring was I could bring intensity to the trainings. And I had no experience, but I could ski fast.
Yeah.
And try and push the older guys. And, you know, that worked for them. And then what they can give back is experience and, you know, kind of show the better ways to work. So that's, like, the foundation of why our team works. And then it's also just trying to do fun things together outside of skiing.
Yeah.
It's like when we were in New Zealand, like, we're always trying to. And I saw, because I had to go home early. Yeah. And the guys were just on vacation because it was quite windy, so they were skydiving and playing golf and swimming and doing all this stuff. So that's fun, you know. We try and do a lot of that stuff as well.
Yeah, I think that's really helpful.
Trying to become, like, and we, like, I see my teammates more than my own family by far. Like, I still say that, like, Lucas is the person who I've spent the most nights in a double bed with, or like a queen size bed.
And then girlfriend's jealous. Yeah.
And then my girlfriend, I told my girlfriend, like, I think, like, we have to be together for like 6-7 years before. No, I think 10 years before she'll catch me before she'll catch Lucas.
Yeah.
Because we have so many nights.
Yeah.
And that's the same with my other teammates as well. You know, you see them because we train together in the summer, and it's like 2 months a year we don't see each other. So we have to be good friends.
Yeah.
On, like, good terms.
For sure. I like that. Last summer, when I was with the U.S. team, we had we talked to a psych person. She's a great woman and is a really, like, accomplished psychologist. But said, you know, there's this pyramid of needs that need to be met before you can perform at your highest level. Yeah. And the first is, like, food and shelter, and the next one's, like, sleep or something like that. But the next one after those very basic needs is, like, a sense of belonging.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And, like, I hear that, like, you saying that with the Norwegian team, and I've definitely felt that, like, you know, on the teams that I've been part of, once you feel like you belong and you're secure, then you're just comfortable to do you
be yourself and then also kind of doing what you feel is necessary, because that's the hard thing. Like, sports at a high level, you have to be selfish, but you can still be selfish and, like, be a nice person and help others.
Yeah.
In a sense. But that's why it's so good to, like, that we understand. Like, we're a small team. We're 7 guys in the tech team, and we know each other very well and, like, know how, what we like, and know each other's needs. And that helps, because then you can support each other much better.
Yeah.
And it's not like we don't get annoyed, because, man, I get annoyed a lot, and we all do. But then again, it's like, there's space to, like, actually take the talk with someone if you have to.
Yeah. Do you think is there any, like, specific stories you could tell me of when someone just got really pissed at someone?
Oh, I have a really good one from Solden 2 years ago.
Uh-huh.
That was Lucas and I. We had a couple of clashes, but this one was funny because we were watching, I think we were like, it was Lucas and I. We stayed in a room, and then Timon, Haugen, and Fabian Solheim, they stayed in a room, but it was like one shared apartment. So we had each our room and then shared, like,
living space.
And living space.
Yeah.
And we were watching Squid Game, like, together.
That Netflix. Yeah.
Like, and we were totally hooked, but we were, like, watching it together, all four. And we watched a couple episodes, and then Lucas came into me and was like, hey, do you want to watch? And I was like, yeah, sure, I'll watch. And then he went into Fab and Timon and was like, you guys want to watch? And I was like, nah, I'm a little tired. Like, just won't chill. And then he was like, then he came in to me and was like, those guys don't want to watch. And I was like, okay, but if they don't want to watch, it's no stress for me, then I don't have to. And then he got really mad at me, and I was like, what? And he started, like, kind of not yelling at me, but got, like, really pissed and was, like, starting to say, like, you always back out and always this. And I was like, where's this coming from? Like, it's a TV show. Yeah. And I got, like, seriously pissed. And, like, I don't scream often, but there I did. And I lost it a little. And then I was like, okay, I'm, like, I got to go. And then I went outside and, like, went for half an hour walk. I came back. And I was looking at him. And I was like, let's go sit down and have a talk. And then we talked. And then, you know, what I realized was that he felt that, you know, him and I have always been backing each other and always been pushing. And every time there's a, we need to like challenge the program or do what's best for us, we've done it together. But in that last period, he felt like I wasn't being strong enough with him. Kind of, I was backing out from the battle. So he felt like he was standing in them alone mm-hmm. more. And then what snapped for him was when I didn't want to watch the TV show. Because he was like, I don't think he necessarily realized it, but that's when he understood. So then we had a long talk about it, and it just strengthened us a lot more. You know, but that's like a funny, totally stupid thing that made just exploded everything. And then once we got back, it was like really good. Like then it totally helped, because then I understood where he came from. He understood where I came from. And then like I could support him more, and then he could support me more, and we were like on the same page.
That's a great story. It's so funny that it was just Squid Game. Yeah. But it wasn't just Squid Game.
No, but that was what, and that's why I took it for first. And that's why I got so mad at him. Cause like, how can you stand here getting so pissed at me? Like literally like screaming at me in front of Timon and Fabian for a TV show.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah. You're stupid, man. And then once we went and talked, then he wasn't stupid.
That's a great story.
And so we've had a couple of those. We've gotten a lot better. Like Lucas and I especially have gotten a lot better. Nice. But it's also the same with the other guys on the team. There are always points where you're going to have those clinches. And when you live on top of each other so much, it happens for the most stupid stuff.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah.
And now a message from On Location. What are you doing next summer? How about an unforgettable trip to the Olympic Games Paris 2024? Let us plan your perfect trip to watch the world's best athletes from premium seats with exclusive access to hospitality lounges in the stadium, along with tailored accommodation, tours, and more. Visit hospitalitytravelpackages.paris2024.org for more info.
Well, let's shift gears a little bit and, you know, hit some of these points that we talked about last time.
Hell yeah.
Time. We've got... I mean, how much time do you have?
I have time.
Okay. 4:20 right now. So upbringing. We talked about that a little bit last time, and yeah. I guess we don't need to hit every mark of your upbringing. You probably talked about it in other media, but it was fun to talk about your upbringing because we talked about that. The Norwegian system, and I know everyone's always like, wow, the Norwegian junior system, how do they do it? You know, I think like 10 years ago maybe it was always like, oh, the Austrian junior system, how do they do it? But you just talked about, you know, a couple of things I remember was races weren't timed when you were really young, and they always had national events so you could race against all the best in the country when you were young. So yeah, just tell me a bit about like your upbringing as a young Norwegian skier.
Yeah, so I mean, my dad, of course, he was a World Cup skier, skied the Olympics
for the U.S.
For the U.S. Let's go!
Thank you very much.
I always have that option to come over. He was the one who got me into skiing, and I probably had my skis on for the first time when I was like 2 or 3, but that's something I don't remember. But I didn't really start skiing until I was maybe like 6 or 7, and I absolutely hated it to begin with. But then once I realized that I could take the lift up and ski down and then go in and have a cinnamon bun compared to my mom who brought me out for Nordic skiing, which was like hiking up the hills, then I understood it was something for me.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Easy sell.
Yeah. And then I didn't join my local ski club, which is like Barum Ski Club. Uh-huh. I didn't join it until I was maybe 9 or something. So I just did a bunch of free skiing up throughout the years. And then when I kind of joined the club there, I was like, you know, you don't get times or results in Norway until you're 11 or 12, I think. So I never like really had a concept of if I was a fast skier or not. I just skied because I loved it. I remember my first coach in the ski club, we didn't ski gates for a full winter when I was like 9 or 10. Wow. We only did drills. It was like 2 or 3 times a week after school. went off and did like drills and everything, which was fun. And then once I started realizing I was a little more serious and kind of we got results, then I actually had like pretty decent results. But it's when you're U14, so that's when you're like 12 and 13. That's when in Norway you get matched with the whole nation for the first time. And that's something that's quite unique, I think, with the Norwegian system. So then I remember going, we went to like the west coast of Norway. This was probably 2012, where it's always pouring rain. They get a lot of snow early season, and then it's pouring rain in like the spring. And we were there skiing, and I thought I was a good skier, but I finished like, I was like barely top 10 in like the GS and slalom. So I was quite a ways behind, and that triggered a little bit
fire in
something
you.
In me. Yeah. Oh, okay. Like,
I can get better.
I can get better. Yeah. Like, and then, had a couple really good, like, had some really fun years. We had a really good time in our ski club. We would always go to Hinnertux during fall break and, just do a lot of skiing, but it was always fun. And we were a big group of skiers, like huge variety. We had some serious people, but then there was always a lot of people who weren't that serious and were there because it was fun to ski.
Yeah.
So it was
a good person to have there.
Yeah. It was
great.
Because
it just reminds you that like, the sport is fun.
Exactly. So we had a couple of guys who like, I think they also knew that they were never going to like ski in World Cup races or anything, but they just loved it. And they brought like fun to the table. So it was I remember all my years being so much fun. And then, skiing into FIS, it was funny. Like I never won a junior national title. Neither Lucas or none of us, we ever won a national title when we were like young. From the age of 12 to 16,
damn,
we didn't win.
Huh.
We were both close, but we never actually won because there were so many good skiers, which was always like kept us pretty hungry, or at least kept me really hungry because it was like I wasn't even the best skier in Norway in my age group, so how would I even have a chance in the FIS system? And then coming into FIS and going to ski gymnasium and kind of realizing like, I'm not the best in my age group, but my age group's pretty good. And then, I started doing pretty well and scored some pretty good FIS points. And it was kind of fun. And, then I was starting to think about like the national team. But the problem is and we talked a little bit about this last time and why I think that the Norwegian team always has so strong skiers or has had over the last couple, like the last 20 years.
Yeah.
And it's a lot about the culture. Of course, like, it's a big culture. You get to ski, like compete at a high level throughout the nation when you're younger and everything, but it's damn hard to get into the national team.
But once you're there, it's like you're good enough to be
there.
Exactly.
So
they're stuck there.
There are not many spots. We're 9 guys on the World Cup team and like 7 or 8 guys on the Europa Cup team. That's the whole Norwegian national team in skiing.
There's no D team, right? They just leave it to the ski gymnasiums.
Developed named ski gymnasiums. Yeah. And like you can find PG, like PG programs.
Mm-hmm.
But that makes the competition super hard. And I think that it's really harsh because there are so many good skiers who have like who in any other nation would be good enough to be on the national team and get some support.
Yeah.
But in Norway, they're not.
Yeah. I see. I have an experience with this. I went to Norway to ski some Europa Cups, and I was training somewhere on some hill. And we have like the kind of all of the guys who were going to ski the Europa Cup the next day training. Yeah. And next to us on the lane was just the